MacCast, Sunday, February 28th, 2021. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Glad to be back here for another week of Apple Mac news, information, tips, tricks, and a whole lot more. Hopefully you are having a wonderful, wonderful week and things are going well for you. I'm doing all right here down in San Diego. The weather's been pretty nice and I just really can't complain too much. Also, looking over the show notes, things are pretty exciting and happening in the world of Apple and Macintosh. We have some good things to talk about. We're going to talk about iPhones and how they did last year. Yep, they did pretty well, as you might expect. Spoiler alert. We're going to get into some actions Apple's taking to combat some of the malware that we saw recently and talked about on the last episode of the MacCast. We've got some new animated series coming to Apple TV Plus, along with a few other odds and ends of Apple TV Plus news. Talk about what's coming up next for some new Macs, maybe not too far around the corner, both on the laptop front and on the desktop front. And then some Apple Pay updates and just general retail store updates to talk to you about. And that'll round out the news for this week. And then we're going to follow up on a couple things we talked about in previous episodes of the MacCast. Got a little follow-up from Bill on his Apple Watch allergy thing that we talked about. We talked about Apple Watch materials and allergies in the last episode of the MacCast. He has a nice little update for us that I want to share with you. Also, some follow-up on email signatures. I got some great suggestions from our community there. Then we're going to talk about printers and Big Sur. Many of you are upgrading to Big Sur, and a few of you running into some issues with printers. We'll talk to you about maybe how we can help fix that up. And then a little bit of follow-up on our live photos question from previous episodes of the MacCast. So we got a lot of follow-up on some of our community questions in the show this week. So it should be a good one. Stay tuned. But before we get into everything, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Smile. I want to talk to you about Text Expander, one of the applications that I absolutely rely on for the MacCast, for everything that I do, actually just day in and day out for general stuff. I have a ton of Text Expander snippets, a lot related to the show. As you might imagine, I answer a lot of email and I get a lot of the same questions. And Text Expander provides a great way for me to put together answers for questions that I get over and over again. And then I can just type a few quick shortcuts and boom, it expands out into a full response. And some of the more advanced features allow me to actually customize that too, so I can have fill-in fields and I can have optional text for different sort of variants of different questions that I get. And it's absolutely fabulous. I really, really love it, and it saves a ton of time. It can also save you time basically on anything that is a repetitive typing task or can help you out with mistakes. It can help you send out answers to questions like I do very quickly and easily. Great for customer service teams, great for marketing teams, great for just anyone, really. And the latest version of Text Expander even has new and improved statistics reporting so that you can prove how much time you are saving. It's great for organizations. It gives you the ability to build reports and customize date ranges. So for enterprise or individuals, you can track, you know, how you're doing it as an entire company or how your team is saving time. You can create powerful snippets that save you time, and all you type is a simple short abbreviation. And Text Expander, it takes over. It does the rest. It's available on Mac, Windows, Chrome, iPhone, and iPad, so you could use it wherever and whenever you need it. And best of all, MacCast listeners get 20% off their first year. All you have to do is visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more about Text Expander. That's textexpander.com/podcast. And MacCast listeners, you're going to get 20% off your first year. And a big thank you to Text Expander and Smile for their support of the MacCast. I think there's little doubt now that last year was a pretty good year for Apple. It was also a very good year for iPhone. The iPhone 12 proved to be a very popular model of iPhone for Apple. And at least in the fourth quarter of 2020, according to Gartner, it helped put Apple back on top of the smartphone heap. The popularity of Apple's iPhone 12 helped them become the top smartphone vendor for the fourth quarter of 2020 and rise to rank as the number two smartphone vendor for all of 2020, just behind Samsung. According to the Gartner numbers, Apple saw almost 15% year-over-year growth in the fourth quarter and secured a 20.8% share of the global smartphone market. Gartner also estimates that Apple sold 79.94 million iPhones during the quarter. And this is despite an overall decline in the smartphone market of 5.4% for the quarter. And then looking at the yearly numbers, they say Apple saw overall growth in iPhone sales of about 3.3%, which doesn't sound that great until you compare it to the industry as a whole, which experienced a 12.5% decline. So Apple, one of the few companies last year that actually saw smartphone growth or sales growth in the smartphone market over the past year. So doing very, very well. IDC also came out with a report on how Apple did with the iPhone 12 in Japan. And as you might imagine, iPhone 12 big in Japan in the fourth quarter of 2020. They estimate that Apple captured a 52.6% share of the smartphone market in the fourth quarter in Japan with the iPhone 12. Apple saw a 13.8% year-over-year increase in shipments in Japan, shipping an estimated 6 million units. And for all of 2020 in Japan, iPhones accounted for about 46.5% of the smartphone market. So iPhone capturing just about 50% of the market in Japan, which is just amazing. And then according to DigiTimes, looking forward to the iPhone 13, they're expecting iPhone 13 models to adopt Qualcomm's new Snapdragon X60 5G modem. So moving to the next generation of 5G modems in the iPhone 13, the chips use a 5-nanometer process, which is more efficient and smaller than the Snapdragon X55 modems that Apple currently uses in the iPhone 12. But the big news with the new modem is that they're able to do something called aggregate 5G data, which means they use both the millimeter wave and sub 6 gigahertz bands simultaneously to kind of merge and get the benefits of both. So you get the range and the speed together, and it will take 5G on iPhones to the next level. And that's good because one of the reasons the iPhone 12 did so well this past year is because of the 5G technology. Many people looking to upgrade their older 4G phones to 5G models. And so the iPhone 13 with this new modem should just continue to help with that growth. But great year for iPhones last year. And it's expected that the iPhone 13 will do quite well this year as well. I told you last time on the MacCast about a couple of new pieces of malware that have been compiled to run natively on Apple Silicon, basically to run on the M1 processor. And while that wasn't surprising, because as we discussed, you know, software is being compiled and converted for Apple Silicon, and it's inevitable that malware would also be recompiled to run on the M1. Apple has decided that they are going to take some action and do something about it. You may remember that one of the packages that we talked about was called Silver Sparrow, and it is a malicious package that takes advantage of the macOS installer JavaScript API to execute remote commands. Now, Red Canary, the security firm who discovered the malware, never actually saw or reported a payload actually being delivered or executing. And they also couldn't determine the nature of the exploit. Still, Apple has jumped in and taken steps to stop Silver Sparrow before it can do anything. This is according to Mac Rumors. Apple has revoked the certificates of the developer accounts used to sign the packages, so no further Macs can become infected by the malware. And for any distributed attacks outside in software outside of the Mac App Store, Apple says that they have, quote, industry-leading mechanisms in place to block the attacks. They don't really go into specifics about that, what those industry-leading mechanisms are, but I'm going to guess that they're likely referring to the recent policies that require all Mac software developers with a developer ID for apps outside the Mac App Store to run them through their notary service. This is a service that then scans for malicious content and code signing issues, and if it finds any, can block those applications from running. So that would nip it in the bud and is likely what they are doing. On the iOS side of things, from a security perspective, Apple has also taken some additional actions to make exploits harder for hackers, according to a report by Motherboard. Since 2018, Apple has employed a cryptographic security feature called Pointer Authentication Codes, or PAC, and these prevent attackers from leveraging corrupted memory to inject malicious code into iOS. Now, starting with iOS 14.5, Apple has developed a way to extend these protections to their ISA pointers, which are pointers that tell a program what code to use and when it runs. So by extending that pointer authentication code cryptographic security feature to the ISA, they are going to make it harder for zero-click attacks to happen. These would be attacks that are able to run without you doing any interaction on your iOS device, so they can stop those. They're also going to be able to better stop sandbox escape attacks, which are exploits, as you might imagine, that break out of Apple's sandbox. You may remember that when an app runs in iOS, it is sandboxed and it really can't get out to other parts of the system or over into other apps. There is sandbox escape exploits that hackers will try to take advantage of, and those will also be harder to execute or harder to deploy with this new technology on iOS. Now, this doesn't mean that the exploits will become impossible, just that they are much, much more difficult, so hackers are going to have to work harder. It also will potentially affect some of the ways that the jailbreak community is able to jailbreak iPhones. So they're going to have to find new techniques and new ways to do that as well. So maybe a little bit of disappointing news for the jailbreak community, but for the rest of us, it means better protection from hackers, which, you know, in my opinion, is ultimately a good thing. This week, we also heard about some potential concerns with the SSDs on M1 Macs. There are reports from some pro users that are noting a potential concern for numbers around the total bytes written. This is basically the number of times that you can write to an SSD, which is limited over its lifetime. Now, generally, it's not a problem, but what's happening on these M1 machines is that they're reporting times that look much higher than they should be, considering the amount of time the machines have been in the owner's possessions. We're seeing numbers anywhere from 3 to 13% on the total bytes written. At these rates, it would mean that many of the drives would be reaching 100% total bytes written in just a year or two, which that's pretty bad considering you can't replace the drive, the flash storage in an M1 Mac. It's actually soldered to the motherboard. Now, while this does seem concerning, it's likely not a specific hardware issue. It's more likely that it is something with the software reporting either in macOS, or maybe it could be something wrong with the reporting tools or the monitoring tools set up to get these numbers. First and foremost, those can be notorious for misreporting, but even if they're not misreporting, it could be some sort of conflict between the new ARM architecture and the software, because I would imagine a lot of the reporting tools are not recompiled for ARM. So either way, I'm sure it's something that Apple is looking into and will very likely be resolved. So if you do see that on your M1 Mac, I wouldn't be too concerned just yet. Let's wait for Apple to weigh in, look at it, and see what they say. Hopefully it's not a hardware issue, because if it is, then I think we would be seeing some potential recalls of M1 Max. But anytime you're on a major new hardware architecture redesign, there's bound to be little hiccups and bumps in the road. We'll have to wait this one out, because we're just getting early reports of this as a concern. And then finally, I don't cover macOS incremental updates very much, but there is a feature in macOS Big Sur 11.2.2, or a fix rather, that is pretty important, at least for owners of later model MacBook Pros and MacBook Airs. This update contains code to protect 2019 or later MacBook Pro models and 2020 or later MacBook Air models from being damaged when you connect certain third-party non-compliant powered USB-C hubs and docks. Apparently, a number of folks were doing just that and finding their machines being basically killed. You plug it in and it basically just goes dead. There is new things in the software, the macOS Big Sur 11.2.2 update, that will help protect from that. So if you do have one of those models, you probably want to make sure that you upgrade. The other thing is if you are buying USB-C hubs or docks, you probably want to make sure you're getting them from a pretty reputable supplier and not just a cheap, you know, Chinese thing off of Amazon. So be careful out there. You know, USB-C hubs and docks, they do or can deliver quite a bit of power. And if I were to guess, I would imagine that power mismanagement, or, you know, poor quality power management on those cheaper non-compliant USB-C powered hubs and docks were likely the culprit here. And nice to know that Apple can fix that sort of thing with some software updates. The publication Deadline this past week did an interview with the directors of Wolfwalkers, the Golden Globe-nominated film on Apple TV Plus from Cartoon Saloon. In the interview, Tom Moore and Ross Stewart were asked about what's next for the studio, and they had a pretty interesting response. They mentioned they were going on sabbatical, but that the studio itself was working on a couple of things. They mentioned a new film called My Father's Dragon, although they didn't tie that release directly to Apple or Apple TV Plus. But what they did tie to Apple was that they are planning a 12-episode hand-drawn animated series that will be coming to Apple's service. They say it will be a series of 30-minute episodes with a season finale that is an hour-long special. The series is not announced yet, but they describe it as a, quote, big series, and called it epic. The sequel to HBO's Band of Brothers is also coming to Apple TV Plus. I think we covered this on a episode of the MacCast last year. The series is called Masters of Air, and it is the first series from Apple's own internal production studio. This week, Deadline reported that Austin Butler and Colm Turner will star in the series. Masters of Air is based on the novel Masters of Air by Donald L. Miller, and it follows the story of American and British bomber boys in World War II. And then finally, in Apple TV Plus news this week, the Golden Globes happened Sunday night, and while Apple TV shows were up for several awards, including Best Motion Picture Animated for Wolfwalkers, Best Television Series, Musical or Comedy for Ted Lasso, Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role in Any Motion Picture for Bill Murray in On the Rocks, and the Best Actor in a TV Series, Musical or Comedy Series, Jason Sudeikis for Ted Lasso. And Jason Sudeikis actually won, making it the first Golden Globe win for an Apple TV Plus show or film. So while they didn't win in the other categories, it was amazing just to be nominated. And of course, as you know, Ted Lasso, one of my favorite series. I was really hoping it would win for Best Television Series, Musical or Comedy, but I think it got beat out by Schitt's Creek. So still a good win for Apple and Apple TV Plus. And again, if you haven't had a chance to watch Ted Lasso, still from me, Highly recommended. There are definitely a couple of new Macs on the horizon, and we've been hearing a lot about the Pro features making their way back into this year's upcoming Apple Silicon MacBook Pro updates. This week, Ming-Chi Kuo is confirming earlier rumors that we heard from Mark Gurman about the return of the SD card slot and the HDMI port. Previously, both Kuo and Gurman said that Apple will do a major redesign and come out with a new 14-inch model by reducing the bezels and keeping about the same size and form factor of the current 13-inch model, along with an updated 16-inch MacBook Pro, and that they would feature not only new ports, but also bring back the MagSafe connector for power and ditch the touch bar, which has proven to not really be all that successful. The design is also said to be a new flat edge design, so the top and bottom of the case won't have the kind of slight curve to it. They'll be straight flat all the way across. And the new machines may also be the first Macs to feature mini LED displays. There's no specific release date being mentioned beyond them potentially coming out in the second half of 2021. We're also hearing a little bit more about the potential iMac update, this time coming from YouTuber John Prosser. He's claiming that this year's iMac lineup could bring colors back to the iMac. He says that Apple will use the same colors as last year's iPads, so space gray, silver, rose gold, green, and sky blue. Now, Kuo and Gurman have also mentioned some rumors about Apple's iMac in the past. They did note significant design changes happening this year, but they didn't talk about any colors. They talked more about the iMacs having a look and feel more like Apple's Pro Display XDR. So that would mean a flat back and the bigger change, and we talked about this a little bit, no chin. So basically, edge-to-edge display with a bezel all the way around, flat on the back, and if Prosser turns out to be right, then coming in colors. Prosser also talked briefly about a potential new Mac Pro design coming this year, calling it, quote, less than half the size of the existing Mac Pro. Not really clear if that means it's a new version of the Mac Pro that some of us think that Apple might be coming out with, or just an update to the existing Mac Pro line. I'm putting my money on the former, but he likened it to the design to the old G4 Cube design and says that it will have the compute unit at the bottom of the case with a big heatsink on top. So I don't know if that also means they're going to go for a passive cooling. I would imagine not. I would think they will stick with fans in the Pro models for sure, because cooling becomes such a big issue. So even though the performance and efficiency of Apple Silicon is proving to be amazing, you know, I think any Pro machine is likely going to have at least an active cooling system that can kick in when the workloads get really, really heavy. It's also expected that Apple will release new iPad Pros this year with mini LED displays. That's probably going to happen toward the end of the first quarter, maybe early in the second quarter. Updates are expected to be more evolutionary than revolutionary, with updated A series processors, probably something like an A14X, and on the cellular models bringing in 5G support. The mini LED displays might also be limited to just the 12.9-inch Pro model, with the 11-inch model sticking with the OLED display. And with new iPads, new Mac Pros, new iMacs, and new MacBook Pros all potentially slated to be coming out over the next couple quarters, it's looking like Apple is setting up to have a pretty strong first half of the year with regards to new Apple stuff. Apple Pay is finally available in Mexico. This week, they launched the service, made it available to Citibanamex and Banorte customers in the region. Now, 7 years after the launch of Apple Pay, it is already available in over 60 countries, but Apple is not stopping there. And the next country that might be getting Apple Pay could be Israel. Israeli mobile banking service Pepper updated their app this past week, and in the release notes, they mention a, quote, surprise that would be coming soon. Then, when users launched the app, there was actually a splash screen indicating that you could add your card to Apple's wallet. That didn't work, and very quickly, they removed the Apple Pay splash screen in another update. So they may have tipped their hand a little bit, indicating that Apple Pay could also be coming to Israel sometime soon. And then finally, in the news for this week, Target is getting an upgrade for the Apple section of their stores. They say they're planning to create a, quote, Apple shopping destination experience at retail stores in the United States. Looking at this, this sounds pretty similar to previous store within a store experiences that Apple has done with companies like Best Buy. And if you remember it, I certainly do, CompUSA back in the day. They will bring Apple products and accessories together into one space inside the Target store with demos and questions answered for shoppers by Apple-trained Target tech consultants. They're planning on rolling it out now to about 17 Target locations in the U.S. and have plans to expand to other locations throughout this year. And with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Sanebox. I honestly can't say enough good things about Sanebox. I have been a Sanebox user for years, and it is the only way that I would be able to manage all of my email. Look, we all get inundated with a ton of email, and the idea of inbox zero for most people is impossible. And the reason is just the volume of email that you have to deal with. And that's really where Sanebox comes in, because Sanebox is a tool that will automatically triage and handle your emails for you so that you're not overwhelmed and inundated with how much email lands in your inbox. You can let Sanebox control all of that stuff for you. So you can think of it like an EMT for your email. As messages are flying in, Sanebox does the triage, shifting the important emails, the ones that you want, into your inbox and taking everything else, directing that stuff into other folders like the Sane Later folder, so you can go access that later. Messages that you don't need to pay attention to right away, but it's stuff that you do want to pay attention to later on, can go into your Sane Later folder. They also have nifty features like the Sane Black Hole. This is where you drag and send messages that are from annoying senders. You never want to see them again. Or you have the Sane Reminders folder. This is great for things that you need to follow up on. So you get an email, you don't want to deal with it right away, you can throw it in Sane Reminders. It will come back at a certain date when you need to follow up on it. And best of all, with Sanebox, you can use it with any email client or phone, and you don't even have to create a new email account or download an app. Sanebox just works with your existing email. It truly is amazing. Organize your inbox and never waste time on email again with Sanebox. Sign up today and save $25 on any subscription. Visit sanebox.com/maccast today to start your free trial and get a $25 credit. That's sanebox.com/maccast. And a huge thank you to Sanebox for their support of the show. Last week on the show, we had a little discussion about Apple products, and more specifically, something that I didn't think about too much, the materials that go into Apple products. Specifically, we were talking about the Apple Watch, but it also came up that, you know, for future products, things like a VR headset and bands and materials, basically anything that comes into contact with your body as a wearable, there is a concern for folks who maybe have allergies to certain materials, to certain metals, those sorts of things. And it was brought up by someone in our MacCast community, Bill. We talked about it a little bit on the last episode of the MacCast. Well, this week I received another audio comment from Bill because he had a little bit of a follow-up and a little bit of praise for Apple and how they handled the whole situation. So I thought this was great and I wanted to share it with you. So here's what Bill had to say.
Hi, Adam. Bill here. I just wanted to follow up. Talked with Apple and returning my Apple Watch because of my allergies. Appreciate you putting the shout out there on the show. Great show. Love the show. They really were amazing, even though in the end I couldn't use the Apple Watch and I am concerned about future products with my allergies. They pretty much were amazing. They originally sent me all those articles you talked about and put links to for the show about allergies and the nickel in the different aluminums and metals that are in the back of the Apple Watch. And after all that, I felt my stuff was over. But then I got a call from Apple. I think it was Apple's health department. They called me. They told me they wanted to work with me. They wanted to help me. The initial consultation would be possibly, he gave me a warning. He said it could be over 40 questions, but if I was interested, they want to help me. They want to make sure I can hopefully use the Apple Watch or at least find a solution or confirm that, you know, I shouldn't use it. It was really good. Went through a lot of questions. They were on my team. He had me take pictures of how I wore the Apple Watch, top, right, left, and back. Send him those pictures. He sent that off to their team who analyzed those pictures and how I wear the Apple Watch to see if they could come up with a solution. Pretty amazing. They also talked about putting a case on the Apple Watch. So I did order a case. In the end, he didn't recommend it, but I did it anyway. And yeah, the case didn't help. So in the end, I sent the watch back, but I was pretty amazed at the customer service and how deep dive they went into trying to solve my issue. Thanks for the show. Interesting on why we love Apple so much, even when sometimes it doesn't work out.
Hey, Bill, that is really, really great that they called you up and they really tried to work with you and really tried to, it sounds like, figure out what was going on. And more importantly, I think, probably take that information that you helped them gather and take it back to their teams to kind of help develop and think about materials and things for future products. Because I know one of the concerns that you shared with me in your email message was the fact, or even in your last audio comment, I guess it was the fact that, hey, you know, I might not be able to use some of Apple's other wearable products in the future if they use similar materials, similar things. So obviously they're thinking about it. It's something that they are concerned. They have those great pages on their website that kind of spell everything out. And it's just really cool to hear firsthand how Apple is moving forward and following up on that stuff. So thank you for sharing your story. There might be others in our community that have similar stories. If you do, or if we just want to, you know, do another round of, hey, I got really great service from Apple, that would be great. Share those stories with me. Shoot me an email. Send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. Another thing we discussed on a previous episode of the MacCast was doing email signatures in Apple Mail. And I described a process for you that is how I know how to do them. If you are curious and missed that last episode, you can go back and take a listen. But basically, there's kind of a long, involved process. You have to write HTML. It's pretty gnarly if you're just trying to do an email signature, but you want to include things like an image with a link, which was one of the questions that we received. Maybe put some social media icons in there, whatever it might be. Just a nicely formatted email signature. It's pretty difficult to do in macOS Mail. or at least I thought it was. I threw it out to the community, though, because I figured someone out there might know a little bit of an easier way, and I did get a couple of responses. Bob wrote back and said, hey, I created an email signature, but I just did it in the Notes app. I just put it together in the Notes app, doing some basic formatting. He added some emojis, added some hyperlinks, which you can do in the Notes app, and then just copied and pasted that into his signature in Mail, and that worked out for him. The only downside that I really saw is that the formatting that you're able to do is pretty basic. I also didn't see a way to put a link on an image, which was one of the questions we had from the previous email, but you can create a pretty nice looking signature. Bob had sent me an example and it looked great. And certainly that's much easier than what I described on the last episode of the MacCast. So that's one way you could go. But then I think I received what the real answer is. If you're looking to create a really nice, beautiful email signature, Greg sent in a recommendation for a free web service called Signature Hound. This used to be a paid service, but the developers moved on to other things, and he has made the site available for free. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com, but it's signaturehound.com, and they have a bunch of templates that you can fill out. You do have to sign up for an account, but it is free, so you sign up, and then you can choose from a number of different designs, and then you just simply configure it. So you can put in a headshot, you can put in a logo, you can add in all your social media links, you add your emails and addresses, whatever you want, and you can turn specific parts on and off, and it basically builds you an email signature. And then what you do is you hit a button for installing it on your different mail clients. And then it just gives you simple instructions for how to put the email signature in macOS Mail, iOS Mail, Outlook. I think it covers Google, basically all the major email platforms. It does, or platforms or applications rather, it does cover. So I thought it was a great service. I tried it out. It worked great with macOS Mail. And so if you're looking to create a really nice email signature, that is one you might want to check out, signaturehound.com. And thanks to Greg for sending that in. And also thanks to Bob for his suggestion of just using Notes. I think I've talked about this before, but there is an interesting phenomenon that happens here at the MacCast, and it has to do with questions that seem to pop up from multiple people all around the same time, and I'm not really sure if it's just confirmation bias on my part, but there seems to be these groupings of email questions that come in, and people in the community are thinking about the same things at the same time. And it's just really interesting because these topics won't come up for a very, very long time. And then I get a bunch of emails all related to the same thing. And that happened to me this past week with printers and specifically Big Sur. And again, could be coincidental because people are just upgrading to Big Sur and running into this problem, something maybe you don't think about when you're doing the upgrade. But I got a number of people who upgraded to Big Sur and have older printers, and it turns out, as you might imagine, that their printers stop working. Basically, the drivers aren't available. And with the more modern versions of the Mac operating system, Apple does provide the drivers. They have to be submitted from the manufacturer, so Apple doesn't create drivers, but the printers manufacturers will create drivers, submit them to Apple to be included in the operating system. And oftentimes when you're upgrading, older printers might fall off that list. And so they may have not provided updated drivers to Apple. There might not be updated driver software available for that latest version of the operating system. So this is definitely something you want to check before you're going to do your Big Sur upgrade. But for people who have upgraded and then suddenly discovered that their older printers aren't working, the questions basically were, is there something I can do? You know, what can we do to get older printers up and running? in macOS Big Sur. And one of the first things you might want to do is it could be that there is updated drivers available, but that your system just isn't recognizing them. So you can try resetting the printing system. Now, be aware, if you go through this procedure, it will wipe out all of the printers that you have set up on your Mac. So you are going to have to set everything back up from scratch. So just be prepared to do that. But if your printer's not connecting, you might try this little trick. So on your Mac, you need to go into System Preferences. So just go to the Apple menu, choose System Preferences, and then click on Printers and Scanners. Then press and hold the Control key as you click in the list on the left, and then choose Reset Printing System from the menu that appears. Then after you reset the printing system, the list of printers and scanners in the preferences will be empty. Basically, it will wipe out all of your printers, but then you can go back in and re-add them. And hopefully when you go in to re-add them, you'll be able to find your printer, find the printer drivers, and everything will be good. That does work for a lot of people. It does not work in all cases, though. Like I said, it's going to come down to, are those updated drivers available in the new operating system? And if they're not, another thing you could try is there is an open source project called Gutenprint or GIMP Print. I will link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. It's been around for a long, long time. Basically, it's Unix printer drivers, and because Mac OS is at its core a Unix or Linux-based operating system, really Unix-based, you can use these printer drivers, and they're basically open source, and people create them. They might not offer all of the functionality and features of your printer, but at the very least, you might be able to get basic printing functionality back. And I did confirm it does look like it works in Big Sur. I'm going to kind of temper that a little bit. It may or may not work in Big Sur. It hasn't been updated in a while, but when I checked roaringapps.com, there was at least one report saying that Gutenprint is working in macOS Big Sur. So you can give that one a try if you're really desperate. Obviously, before you do that, I would advise going to the manufacturer's website, checking their support, seeing if they have updated drivers there, because they might. So that's another way to go. But if you're at a last resort, GIMPrint or Gutenprint could be the thing that gets your printer back up and running. But you know, again, of course, anytime you have older hardware that you're connecting to your system and you're doing a major system update, this is definitely one of those things you want to check before you upgrade, because it's really frustrating to find out about it after the fact, you know, and then have to maybe go buy a new printer just because you upgraded your operating system and maybe you weren't prepared to do that yet. So this happened to a number of people, like I said, got a lot of emails about it, so I thought we'd talk about it this week. And then the last thing that I want to talk to you about in this episode of the MacCast is a little follow-up on a question, again, that we received in the last show. This one about saving live photos from messages on the Mac and getting those into the Photos application. I played around with this. I did a bit of Googling to try and figure out how you could actually accomplish this. You're able to do it kind of going from iOS to Photos if you're using iCloud Photo Library, but that's not something that everybody uses. And it's really weird that, you know, with Big Sur being much more in terms of messages functionality like iOS messages, that you can't just simply take a live photo and either drag and drop it into the Photos app or share it with the Photos app and have it just work. What you end up with is just the static photo in whatever format it was taken in, either JPEG or HEIF, high efficiency image format, for the newer iPhones. And that's a little bit frustrating. So I threw it out to the community, and I had two people write in with instructions for how to kind of get at the RAW files, the JPEG or HEIF file, and the movie file that gets generated when you create a live photo. And if you can get at those two images, you can bring both of those into the Photos app. And I think as long as they're named exactly the same, but with different extensions, the Photos app is smart enough to know that that is a live photo, and it will kind of merge them back together inside the Photos app. And so the instructions that I received went like this. They said if you go into the Messages app and you control click or right click on the live photo in the Messages app, you'll get a drop down and you go under the Services menu and choose Show in Finder. This will take you to the Finder and it will reveal a static image directory called Transfers. And then if you go back up one level from the Transfers directory, there is a directory named Messages. And within this, you will see the image file with a just kind of random name. It'll be like just a big hash name in the extension .pvt. You control click or right click on the PVT file and choose Show Package Contents. And when you do that, then you will see that static image file, very often a JPEG, and the .mov movie file, the two files that make up that live photo. And you can take those and drag them right into the Photos app, and that will get the live photo into your Photos app on the Mac. Now, this did not work for me, these instructions. I think they might be for macOS Catalina or earlier, maybe an earlier version of the operating system. I tried to do this in Big Sur, and it didn't work. Basically, I couldn't access the services menu, and actually the files were not in a .pvt archive. So what did work for me is I worked out a little bit of a different way to get at these files because they're basically not easy to find. You could try to navigate down through like application support into Messages and then get into these folders. But Apple, as they do with a lot of these libraries, basically names the folders very cryptically and the files very cryptically. They're just, you know, letters and numbers, and you'll never really ever figure it out. So what I did was I went into Messages, I control clicked or right clicked on the live photo, and I chose Open. This will open the image in the Preview app, and then you'll see that long cryptic file name in the title bar. You can click on that and you'll get a little drop down menu and you can select the file name and actually copy it. So you copy the file name and then you can quit Preview and go back to the Finder, and under the file menu, go to Find or just use Command F to bring up a search in the Finder, and then paste in that file name. Now, that's not really going to get you anything because you actually need to search through system files, which are not searched by default. So you're going to need to click the little plus icon to add a new condition. So over right at the top of the menu bar, or not the menu bar, the top of the list view over on the right, you'll click the little plus symbol, and then you need to add the system files condition. Now, it might be under the other conditions, so just go down there if you don't see it, but choose system files and set the value to are included so that it does include system files in your search. Once you've done that, then it should show you that JPEG image or the image file name. Now you're going to command click or right click on that and choose Show in Closing Folder. And once you do that, boom, you should see again the image file, probably a JPEG, and the movie file. And once again, you can take those two files, drag them into Photos, and it will import that as a live photo. At least that's what worked for me. So kind of a convoluted process, but it does get us there. And if anybody knows a even simpler way to do this, maybe there's a program. I don't know. I guess you could write probably a automator script or something to actually do this for you in some way. You know, and if you know such a thing, or if you can write such a thing, let us know about it. maccast@gmail.com. But man, Apple, can we just make it a little bit easier to get a live photo from messages into Photos on the Mac? I mean, come on, it really can't be this hard, but apparently it is. Oh, well, what are you going to do? With that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of TextExpander and PDF Pen, also TextExpander and PDF Pen for iOS. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You'll find them at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. Those are at maccast.com. And if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or find me on Instagram, just MacCast on Instagram. That is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.